there a place in time where logic breaks down and wonderment begins? Could that be somewhere or sometime along an indefinable line between the reasonable and the highly unlikely? Makeshift Stories presents a monthly journey into the improbable.
Today's story, The Rising Waters, Part 1. Read by Mitchell Two. Audio post-production by Matthew Erdman. Somewhere and sometime, a seemingly innocuous phrase may have the power to change the world.
Does saying something over and over eventually make it real? Can enough people simply repeating a few words cause a manifest change to the universe? If you had asked me a few months ago, I would have laughed, called you a flake, and said no. But now, I'm not so sure. Reality seems much less immutable these days. Something more like a mutually agreed-on fiction. A story to make us feel secure and safe. It all started 6 months ago at an upscale coffee shop. You know the type, where they call a 90-cent cup of joe something you need a translation algorithm to figure out. Like a mint mocha macchiato ristoretto with gluten-free almond milk. Then charge you $10, netting 1,000% profit after materials and underpaid labor are accounted for. But my contact was paying, so I didn't care. I picked her out as soon as I entered the joint. She was obviously fronting for a client who didn't want to be connected to whatever dirt I was going to be asked to fix. Dressed in an understated dark gray business suit, she didn't stand out to the untrained eye. But if you could afford clothes like that, which weren't machine designed and manufactured, you'd immediately recognize the cut and quality. It screamed to those in the know and in the dough, "I'm a player." Myself, I'm Value Village. But in my former career as an elite corporate intel agent, before my big mouth got me kicked out, I had been trained to recognize such things, down to the stitch pattern of individual haute couture houses. She was wearing Gemma de Sol, not top end, but well beyond the reach of 98% of the population. This meant the gig would be some no-cost-is-too-high affair the player didn't want public. My current credit balance, or more accurately, lack of one, left me salivating at the possibilities, so I casually sidled up to her table, trying to disguise my eagerness.
"Good morning, Mr. River."
Her engineered smile was so bright, I suspected it cast shadows on the wall behind me.
"Please, sit down."
She motioned me into a comfy-looking, vat-grown leather chair. I sat, before realizing we were the only people in the coffee shop, and my handheld was no longer connected to the net. In hindsight, 20/20 vision is a wondrous thing. I should have spun around and run away as fast as my non-athletic legs would move me. But at the time, I was focused on the bucks, rather than looking the gift horse in the mouth. "Nice place. You a regular?" I probed. But this lady was a pro. She just kept the wattage up on her grin and nodded to an aluminum thermal cup with the shop's neo-modern logo laser etched into the sides.
"Dark roast, black. I did my research, Mr. River. Unless you've changed your tastes since leaving Arclight Infotech."
Her intense emerald eyes challenged me to disagree.
"My sources say no."
"Thanks." I reached for the cup and took a tentative sip. It was the first coffee I had encountered that tasted better than the smell of fresh ground beans. Obviously very expensive and likely exclusive to this place. So it would be the first, and at the same time, the last cup I would have. I savored its rich, almost decadent flavor, but swallowed before I gave away how much I liked the brew.
"So, what else have your sources told you about me, Ms.?
She took a sip of her creamy-looking barista masterpiece, destroying the intricate design floating on its surface. A little foam stuck to her upper lip, which she seductively licked away.
I didn't say, but you can call me Victoria with a K. Enough about me.
She leaned back, giving me the critical once-over with her eyes.
Let's see. You're an ex-Arclight Infotech operator before your attitude got you kicked out. You were in the hyper-secret, short-lived experimental cognition enhancement program, and the only subject left sane by it. So, you can probably read me like a book. Are you doing it now?
If Victoria with a K was trying to rattle me with that personal tidbit, it wasn't going to work. I advertised my rather unique qualification on my website. My senses have been enhanced, so I can tell what people are thinking by reading their micro-expressions. The other three voluntolds couldn't learn how to shut the extra input off, and eventually had to be isolated to keep sane. I almost joined them too, until I learned how to control that augmented part of my brain, only turning it on when I needed it. Like right now, I had chosen not to see into the soul of Victoria with a K. She knew I could see through any subterfuge, so she had no reason to hide anything. But it was also what got me kicked out of Arclight Infotech. I just couldn't help reading my superiors and calling a spade, when they started slinging the dung so thick you could smell the lies. They couldn't take away what they had given me. Instead, they decimated my reputation so badly, the only cases I could get as an independent were chasing down deadbeat husbands or gathering evidence on infidelity. At least it was work, but the dollars weren't there, even when the clients paid, and I was getting too old to confront testosterone-intoxicated cheaters. So, Victoria with a K's call caught my attention. No, I'm not reading you. Which was technically true at the instant I said it. But I can, if you want a demonstration. Victoria shook her head.
That won't be necessary, Mr. River. We've already confirmed you're the real thing. It's why we sought you out.
And if I ask you who the royal we is? She took a long sip of her drink before answering, put it down, then stared at me intensely.
You, of anyone, should understand how these things work, Mr. River.
Which I interpreted as it was none of my business, and to keep my nose and special talent out of it if I wanted to stay healthy.
You'll get 2K a day and a 500K completion bonus. Does that interest you, Mr. River?
The money should have been a tip-off. But I was only seeing winter vacations on a Mexican beach. Did that interest me? She had to be kidding. She would have known it was more money than I had made in the entire 8 years since leaving Arclight Infotech. My gift was working overtime to tame my own micro-expressions. I didn't want to reveal how the rest of my brain was already singing hallelujah and calling the travel agent. I leaned back in my designer chair, steepling my hands. 2,500 and 650K. I throw out, testing the waters. I didn't want to sound desperate.
Agreed,
she said, a little too quickly, letting me know I could have asked for more.
Have you heard the phrase, the rising waters?
I shook my head.
We need to know where it came from and who's spreading it.
Why? I opened that special part of my brain and observed. The almost imperceptible twitch of her lower lip told me she didn't know, but had been ordered to bail if I pursued this avenue of inquiry. Victoria with a K was just an overpaid messenger. To be honest, I hadn't done idea origin tracing in years. but knew it was way too much dough for the job. That should have made me ask more questions, made me step back and think twice about accepting. However, greed is a funny thing, isn't it? Greed is like a pair of rose-colored glasses that masks the truth in an attractive glow. Instead of listening to my screaming lizard brain and running away, I said, "Deal," holding out my hand. Victoria looked at it for a second, as if my skin were a viral cesspit, then slid a small data card across the table.
"Don't load this on anything connected to the net,"
she warned, then got up and left. I nodded, holding back a smile. Hey, maybe I would be able to afford a cup of joe in a joint like this on a regular basis. And maybe, just maybe, I'd get to meet someone totally out of my league, like Victoria with a K, again. I used an old laptop I excavated from an ancient layer of my storage locker with a broken net adapter to access the data card. The chip slid into the port with a confident click. Then data began to flood onto the ancient machine's screen. I found a visualization program and connected it to the chip's output, wrangling the meaningless stream into a heat map of the city. Centered on an area within walking distance to my capsule apartment, not quite close enough to the edge of the gentrified commercial zone to justify its exorbitant price. The display's glowing, colored lines looked as if a drugged spider had given up on building a boringly predictable web and had channeled Jackson Pollock. I discovered I could filter the data, creating different patterns, which seemed almost random until you looked closer. The colored globs were positioned over CCTV cameras and mics the city used to keep more than a casual tab on its citizens, which, in turn, had spawned a large black market in visual and audio scrambling devices. I opened the accompanying notes. Red equals every occurrence of the target phrase. Blue equals audio, and green equals visual. Most of the blobs were blue. I clicked on one, a hidden mic beside the outdoor patio of one of the most popular eateries in Minktown, a place I couldn't even afford the bribe to get in. Two voices, female and male, floated out of the cheap, tiny speakers.
"With all the strange weather recently, I've heard the rising waters are coming."
The man, probably sipping a drink which cost more than most people earned in a day, finally put his glass down with a clink.
"I've heard that too. Are you concerned?"
he asked, in a casual tone. I tried another blob, this time from a street microphone in the yet-to-be-gentrified corner of Old Town. The kind of place you can still get a beer and a burrito well south of $6. The kind of place I could afford more than a capsule apartment if I didn't care about the connotation implied by the address. But I needed the uptown location. No one in their right mind would hire a PI from Old Town. As soon as the file loaded, I heard a street kid screaming at someone. Most of it was distorted. But in the background, there was another voice, partially masked by the yelling, so I almost missed it.
"After the storm last night, Young Dong says the rising waters are coming."
I couldn't place the accent. It wasn't local. Taken individually, the audio clips appeared to be random bits and pieces of conversations, each containing the phrase, each clip making sense in context. On its own, the phrase wasn't much of an outlier. That is, until you hear it over and over and over. Then, the concentration begins to jump out, like a bad skin graft which refuses to blend with the original flesh color around it. But without knowing how many hundreds of thousands of conversations were sifted through to come up with this map, well, I hope you get the picture. If you're seeing a small part of the elephant, you wouldn't recognize it for what it is, and man, I felt like I was seeing only a few square millimeters of who knows what, and that made me feel queasy. Like I had just eaten some questionable undercooked street food. I would have normally walked away, but the money, enough to put me on Easy Street, had me lined up like an iron filing stuck to a magnet. I knew I shouldn't let my wallet make my calls, but hey, what would you have done? After 2 hours of getting nowhere, I needed a break, so I called up my old pal Yaroslav, who, if anyone, would have a handle on what was happening on the street. He runs a bar and grill on the edge of the euphemistically named Parkdale, which has neither parks nor dales. It's a wasteland of late 20th century strip malls. Yaroslav hollowed out an old 24-hour mini-mart and called it Vlad's Burger and Brew. Just looking at the food, you need to ingest a handful of statins so your veins don't clog. It's why I love the place. Yaroslav said business was slow, so I left my capsule and headed across town on foot. It was a nice day, and I figured the walk would help me clear my head. The route took me through the hub, a collection of crumbling apartments, narrowing streets, and hole-in-the-wall businesses, half of them boarded up after the last crash. It's also one of the most heavily tagged places on the planet. I mean, the spray paint is so thick, you can't tell what's holding up what. Maybe the walls the tags were sprayed on had disintegrated years ago, and the paint was now the structural element holding the underlying buildings together. An interesting thought, and I was musing about this when I turned a corner, and there it was, on the top layer, a super fresh tag, which sent a shiver up my back. The rising waters were sprayed in a casual cursive, the tail of the S forming an active riverlet of red liquid, following gravity down the wall to fossilized pools of old excess paint on the ground. I reached out and touched it to make sure it was there, and indeed, the tag was still wet. I could even smell the acrid enamel droplets in the air. It was that fresh. I quickly looked around, hoping I may catch a glimpse of the person who had done this, but the streets were empty. I made a note of the time and looked for the closest CCTV camera. It was across the street on a lamppost. I took down its number and sent a query off to Panopticon Imaging, the security company which currently held the city contract for surveillance. I had used my unique talents to crack a case for them a few months back, so their head of analytics owed me one. I heard the hit, the sound of something unyielding plowing into soft flesh, before I felt pain so intense between my shoulder blades that I almost blacked out. Had I been shot? No. Had that come from a 45, I would already be on the ground bleeding out. Instead, I grimaced and spun around to face my attacker. The street was empty, except for garbage and the projectile which had rebounded and lay in a pile of discarded fast food wrappers about a meter from my feet. I had been hit by a baseball-sized rock with a message wrapped around it, held in place with blue rubber bands. A message wrapped around a rock? Really? Despite the immediate pain, I found myself laughing. My would-be assailant had a twisted sense of humor. If we ever met, I might even like them. I checked the street corner in all directions, but no one was there. I noted the numbers of the next two closest CCTV cams and sent those along to my contact as well. I am methodical rather than emotional. Probably why most people find me cold and hard to relate to. When I convinced myself there wouldn't be a second act, I bent down and picked up the makeshift projectile, snapped off the elastics, and read. Next time it won't be a rock. Don't poke your nose where it's not welcome. The message was laser-printed in Comic Sans on standard A4 paper. I was tempted to throw it away, but it might hold more clues. I mean, who would print a threat in Comic Sans? I decided I really wanted to meet this person. Once there was no reason for them to murder me, of course.
Hey, great to see you, Corey!
Yaroslav yelled from across the nearly empty bar. I didn't need to turn on that special part of my brain to know he was sincere. I owed him money, so of course he was happy to see me. Yaroslav was an Eastern European refugee who had fled the great reabsorption of those countries. We in North America barely know exist, into the newly expanded Russian Federation. He never talked about his life, but had the quiet confidence and contradictory anxiety of someone who had a substantial silent partner. Word on the street had it he was owned by the Georgian Mafia, an organization equally interested in money and intel. So, we all assumed you paid for a drink or meal at Vlad's Burger and Brew with more than money, and I was hoping I could benefit from that other currency.
It's been a long time, old friend.
He gestured me to the bar, where he was cleaning glasses. I had admittedly been avoiding Yaroslav until I had the clams to put a substantial dent in my rather large tab. I sidled up to one of the old stools, which Yaroslav had bolted to the floor, so they couldn't be repurposed as a club or a missile. Anything that could be nailed down was, in Vlad's Burger and Brew. It was just that kind of neighborhood. I wanted to start off on a good note, so I pulled out a credit chip and pushed it across the bar to Yaroslav, who stared at it like it was a piece of smelly doggy doo-doo.
Is there anything on it this time?
He growled suspiciously. Yep, I smiled. Got a new gig. Pays $2.50 a day. I intentionally dropped a zero. I didn't want Yaroslav thinking he could gouge me on the food and drinks. He picked up the chip and tentatively pushed it into the slot on his pay machine. He looked surprised, then finally smiled.
Want the usual?
Sure, but I also want to talk. My handheld buzzed. It was my contact at Panopticon Imaging. They had two vids for me. As Yaroslav headed back to the kitchen to place my order, I thumbed the small screen on. The first vid was grainy, but there it was. A kid, maybe 17, 18. It was hard to tell. He or she's body was obscured by bulky sweats, and their face hidden in the shadow of an oversized bill of a bright blue baseball cap. I noted what might have been a crest, which looked like the curl of a wave on the front panel. I wasn't sure, and given the events of my day so far, I didn't entirely trust my understanding of what I was seeing. Maybe my mind was making stuff up to suit the case, so I could keep the tab running and my credit full. But then again, I was watching a vid of someone with a can of red spray paint, one hand gliding over the wall, forming the very words I was tracking down. A coincidence? Suddenly, they glanced over their shoulder, made a hurried, half-hearted attempt at an S, then ran out of the frame. A few seconds later, I showed up. I can see the shock on my face, my hand reaching out to touch the letters and coming away with red on my fingers. The next vid auto-played. The perpetrator had taken the time to position themselves in a narrow blind spot between the cameras. The vid only showed me getting hit. It was useless, so I swiped back to the anonymous graffiti artist.
Here is your burger and fries.
Yaroslav made me jump. He had come up from behind. Obviously, I was losing my touch. In the old days, I would have heard him. Nothing ever got the better of me back then, but it was the second time today. Maybe it was a hint that I should retire. Do something more appropriate for a senior, like greeting shoppers at the mall. My mouth began to water at the smell of bacon, cheese, egg, and a spicy meat patty. The house special. I know if my doctor caught me eating one, I'd be scolded like a miscreant 7-year-old who ate all the cookies. But I was taking the pills. Weren't they supposed to compensate for stuff like this? One doesn't live forever, so you've got to have a few luxuries. Yaroslav dropped the plate and mug of beer down on the bar, then took the stool beside me.
What you got there?
I handed him my handheld, then attacked the burger.
That's you, right?
I nodded, luxuriating in the greasy crunch of the bacon and juice of the patty, then swallowed, washing it all down with the beer.
How did you get this?
Called in a favor.
You interested in that kid or the words on the wall?
Yaroslav put my handheld down. Have you heard them before? I mean, with all the people through this joint, you hear things, right?
I do. I find out things I shouldn't know. Like who's doing what to whom. What the street prices are, who to avoid, that kind of thing. I can't help but overhear stuff, but I keep my mouth shut. That's why I'm still in business. But that...
Yaroslav pointed to my handheld.
That's one of those statements you could hear and forget you had. It's nothing special.
Maybe if you think hard about it, you've heard it repeated a few times in conversation? I suggested between mouthfuls. The big Slav shook his head.
Can't say I have, can't say I haven't. But I might know that kid. If you tell me why you're interested.
He held out his hand, waiting for another credit chip. Normally, I don't have to pay for Yaroslav's intel. Maybe it was the beer, or intoxication from the sugar and fat in the house mayonnaise. Or maybe I'm just getting too old for the business. That should have been another red flag, in a day already too full of them. But I didn't question it. Okay. I pushed a second chip his way.
Makeshift Stories is a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, powered by ATB Financial. To listen to other great APN award-winning podcasts, such as Not There Yet, a series of short essays by Terence C. Gannon covering a wide range of subjects from the perspective of the second decade of the 21st century, head over to albertapodcastnetwork.com. This episode of Makeshift Stories is brought to you by World on Fire, a new podcast from CBC Edmonton. World on Fire is a new 5-part series that takes you to the front lines of out-of-control wildfires in Canada, Australia, and California. Recorded during the COVID-19 pandemic, hosts Adrian Lamb and Mike Flanagan look at what it takes to find hope in the midst of fear and destruction, and how communities affected by wildfires rebuild. This series examines the high costs that wildfires cause to people's health, homes, and communities. Find World on Fire on the CBC Listen app or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also find it online at cbc.ca/worldonfire. This episode is also brought to you by Storylines, a podcast from Women in Film and Television Alberta. Storylines highlights some of our province's most successful women in film and television, both behind the camera and in front of it. Host Sheena Rossiter is herself a filmmaker, and she has had some deep and instructive conversations with trailblazers and experts in the field. A recent episode you might find interesting is
Emily Renair Wallace, fantastic first AD. This episode, you'll hear from 1 AD, Emily Renair Wallace, as she talks about the role and importance of assistant directors on film and television sets with Storylines host Sheena Rossiter. Find Storylines on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also find it at wifta.ca. That's WIFTA.ca. Makeshift Stories recently sponsored Edition 51 of the Fiction Podcast Weekly. The newsletter brings you the latest from the world of audio fiction, audio drama, and storytelling. You can find Fiction Podcast Weekly at thepodcasthost.com/fictionpodcastweekly. Makeshift Story is released twice a month around the 1st and the 15th. This month's story was written by Alan V. Hare and read by Mitchell Tu. Audio post-production by Matthew Erdman. Opening and closing themes were composed and recorded by David Hume. To find out more about David, head over to davidhume.me. If you'd like to connect with us, please send an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. Links to both are in the show notes. You can help us out by subscribing on Apple Podcasts or any of your favorite podcast services. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons non-commercial attribution, no derivative license, which means you are free to share our stories. Just remember to credit us and don't alter anything.